It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Good evening and welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined by my good friend Jim Barrier, fresh back from a trip to Thailand, formerly known as Siam and known to many through the musical The King and I. Jim will talk about his trip and a lot of other stuff, etc., 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 to pay a little bit of homage to Yul Brynner. Jim, welcome back to the States.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Bob. And you know, that movie is banned in Thailand.
Really?
Yeah, they don't approve of
it. I thought they portrayed the king in a fairly positive way. And I know it's based on a true story. Of course, I'm sure they exaggerated and changed a lot of things. But it is based on a real Anna and the King story.
Yeah, it is. Actually, there have been several stories, films and stuff. The musical, though, with Yul Brynner is the one that was most famous. But yeah, they don't show that film over there. For some reason, they disapprove of how that whole relationship was portrayed and stuff. But it is now Thailand, not Siam.
Yes.
Though we did visit ancient Siam, and we went to a number of historical places while we were there. If I get a chance to ramble, I'll talk about some of that. But I just want to give you a little breakdown of the trip and then some of my observations that might be relevant to this show and the things that you talk about. First off, it was the longest trip I've ever been on. It was over 30 hours getting over there.
30 hours? Changing planes a lot, I assume?
There was a lot, and we had an 8-hour layover in Tokyo. But we went through 5 different airports on the way over there and back, beginning with
San Antonio. These days it could take you 30 hours just to get through one airport.
Yeah, it's crazy. So we started in San Antonio, went to Dallas, then to Tokyo, then Bangkok. On the way back, we went from Bangkok to Tokyo to LAX, and then to San Antonio. And in all of those airports, I just wanted to throw this out there for you Californians. Of all of those airports that we went to, LAX was absolutely the most unclean place. I don't know if it's just something that's going on in that state.
Well, and I've been to LAX, and it has not been that way in the past. But the city of Los Angeles, like so many cities run by Democrats, is just in shambles.
Yeah. And I hadn't been in LAX in years. And I think the moment that just stood out for me there, we're sitting there, we're in the terminal, so we're through security, we're waiting at the gate, and I look over, and there's a guy rummaging through the trash can. And at first I thought, well, maybe he lost something or something. He looked kind of like a homeless person, but he obviously has a ticket because he's sitting there at the gate. And then he goes over and he starts going through another trash can, and I thought, that's bizarre. Nobody that worked there, no security, none of the American Airlines people or anybody else said a word or even approached him. I thought, maybe that's just normal these days, but that was a strange impression. I'll never forget that. But anyway, that was a long, long flight through a lot of airports. I will say this, I don't know if we're supposed to give plugs on the radio, but Japan Airlines was the best I've ever been on. And I've flown all over the world. You know, we travel a lot. And I was just very impressed with Japan Airlines, particularly with their flight crew that are so polite. And they were so attentive and everything. So there's a free plug for somebody at JAL. So
if only I had some reason to go to Japan, I'd take you up on that.
Well, if we ever go over in that vicinity again, we'll look for Japan Airlines. Of course, the reason we booked it is because it was just the most affordable fare we could find. So it seemed a good way all the way around. Now, we get to Bangkok. And I don't know how much I told you about. I went over there because the guy that was my closest friend in high school prior to my becoming a Christian lives over there. He's been over there for 17 years. And he kept saying, come visit, come visit. So we decided to go visit. And that's what took us to Thailand. And they live in the Bangkok area, which the Bangkok metropolitan area is 14 million people.
Wow.
That's like Houston and L.A. combined. And the traffic, oh my gosh, the traffic is horrendous. The most common mode of transportation is little motorbikes. And so there's these thousands of motorbikes flying in and out. And just, you think they're going to run into a bus or something every time. So that was crazy. The pollution was horrible. I wore a mask everywhere, not because of COVID, but because the air was so bad.
Oh, I guess there are some real reasons out there still to wear masks.
Well, and most of the people do. It's very common. And so I have this thing, honor the community standard. It's similar to Paul's thing of do the Romans, I'm a Roman, to the Jew, I'm a Jew, that kind of thing. So when I travel, I kind of go with what is the normal accepted thing. I don't want to rock the boat when I'm in someone else's country. Now, in this country...
So when you're in America, you say, to the idiot I became as an idiot that I might win the idiots?
I sometimes feel that way. And we're going to touch on that in the second half of the show, by the way. So anyway, pollution was bad. The food is very different. And I will say this, if you've ever traveled, like if you go to Italy, Italian food in Italy is not like Italian food in America. And so it is with Thai food. The food over there was not like you would get in a typical Thai restaurant here in the States. But they use odd spices. It's weird food. And they're predominantly Buddhist, so they don't eat a lot of beef. But they do eat pork, so they don't have a problem with pork. But a lot of vegetables, a lot of soupy stuff, seafood. I lost 8 pounds on the trip, either because I just couldn't eat that much or we were walking a lot. But it's very strange food, but cheap. You could go out and buy a meal, a good meal, for just a couple of dollars U.S. The difference between the baht, which is their currency, and the U.S. dollar is crazy. So everything is pretty cheap there. In many ways, even though it's an Asian country and predominantly Buddhist, Bangkok, at least, is very, very Western. Everyone has a cell phone, and they're glued to them. They're walking around, looking at their phone. They're sitting on the train, looking at their phone. I felt right at home with that. People were on their cell phones constantly, playing games or doing whatever. And commercialism abounds. Everywhere you go, somebody's selling something. There are stores and shops, and you walk along, and people just sell stuff out of the back of their house. They have little restaurants, and they set up a hibachi. And so everybody's trying to make a baht. That seemed very Western, the commercialism. But on the other hand, overall, the people were very, very polite. I didn't get any attitudes from anybody, even teenagers. The people were very nice, very polite. They smile, and they do this thing. They kind of bow, and they put their hands together, kind of like in a little praying motion type of thing. And that's the common greeting. And we learned, you know, from our hosts, wait until someone else does it, and then you return that. You do a little bow, put your hands together. And they're just, you know, they were very courteous, very friendly. And I found that quite refreshing. So that's a little bit just my view of the culture. Now, we were in Bangkok the whole time. We did go on a couple of road trips a few hours out of town to see some sights. But in the city, it seemed very Western. Vehicles and pollution and money and people dressed very much like Americans for the most part. Except for every once in a while, you'd see monks here and there, and they're always in the orange robes.
And these would be Buddhist monks, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we met a few of them. And interesting to talk to Buddhist monks that they can speak English. But the people, I loved the people. I don't think I would want to live there. Now, my friend lives there. He's been there because, you know, he gets a pension. He worked for the phone company, retired. Now he's on Social Security. And he lives on pennies on the dollar. So they're living great over there. So it was just an interesting culture. And for me, just it was my first time in an Asian country. And so it was quite an eye-opener. And I saw wild water buffalo when we're out on a bus tour, and monkeys, and I fed a baby elephant. That was a real thrill. So it's a jungle. It's basically, we were there, they told us to come in December or January because it's the only time that it's not hot. And it was in the 90s the whole time. So that was their cold season. So, wow.
Now, Jim, you realize you could have done all this at the San Diego Zoo. You didn't have to go all the way to Bangkok for
well,
this.
I know that. And when people tell me they've got a great zoo, San Antonio has a cute little zoo. People talk about their zoo. I say, you know, I'm from San Diego. And that usually that ends the conversation.
Although my son lives in Waco. I've been to the zoo in Waco. It's not a bad, I like it. San Diego Zoo is so overwhelming. You know, you're never going to see it all in one visit. It's nice to go to those zoos where you know you've seen everything when you're done.
Yeah, that's true. In most towns, that's the way the zoo is. Now, San Diego, I always tell people if they go there the first time, ride the bus first. and then go back and visit the couple of things that you'd like to see, because you can't see the whole place in one day other than taking the bus tour through the whole place. So San Diego Zoo, another plug right there. Boy, we're doing all these free commercials.
Except the last time we took the bus, I could have seen the whole zoo by the time the bus finally took off.
Yeah, that happens. Well, I love the San Diego Zoo, grew up with it, and it's like going to another country sometimes. So you're right, we could have seen all those things there, but it's fun to see stuff in the wild. Now, I want to talk about Buddhism. That's the predominant religion in Thailand, and some comparisons between Buddhism and Christianity. And, of course, you being the apologist have probably done a lot on Christianity and comparative religions. But it was just an interesting thing for me to see. And the people we were visiting, my friend who I grew up with, he's a professing Buddhist, and he married a Thai native, and she's a Buddhist. But it was interesting to see, even though they claim to be Buddhist, you know, they never go to temple, they don't go to services, and they pretty much don't really keep the rules. But they're
all religions have their nominal varieties, just like we have people in Europe and America that call themselves Christians and don't know the Bible from the back of a bubblegum card.
Exactly. And that's what I was struck with, that seemed pretty common. So I want to go through real quickly the Eightfold Path of Buddhism. The first one is right view, and that is that our actions have consequences, and that death is not the end, and our actions and beliefs have consequences in the afterlife, whatever that may be. The second one is right resolve. In other words, right thought, right aspiration, or right motivation. You know, we have that. That's part of biblical worldview, is to have a proper motivation. Right speech, which means no lying, no rude speech, no gossip, no idle chatter. Now, you can find those things right in the Bible. Right conduct. And they get specific here. No killing.
So far, ABC's The View doesn't qualify for any of these.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, hold with me over the break, and we'll continue talking about Buddhism with my good friend Jim Barrier.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
Okay, so we're on the fourth of eight paths, the Eightfold Path. And the fourth one is right conduct, which is no killing or injuring, no taking what is not yours or not given to you, no sexual misconduct, and no material desires. Now, I think a lot of people fail miserably on that because there was so much commercialism there was an awful lot of material desires going on there. But that's the fourth one. And I talked to a monk one time and said, you know, okay, you don't believe in killing or taking life, but you're not vegan. You'll eat fish or whatever. And he said, yes, but when you catch a fish, you want to catch a really big fish, not a bunch of small fish, because then you're only robbing the planet of one soul and not a bunch of them. I thought, oh, well, okay, that kind of makes sense mathematically. It doesn't make sense to me on a spiritual level. So that's part of their pathway. The next one is right livelihood. No trading of weapons, living beings, in other words, slavery, meat, liquor, or poisons. Interesting.
No, wait, how can you eat meat if you're not allowed to trade meat?
You know, that it's like so many things in religion. You know, you have these nice sounding rules, but it's pretty hard to live up to that one. Yeah, you can eat, but you should give things away, share things, but you shouldn't be buying and selling, I guess. But I don't know. And then right effort. This is preventing the arising of unwholesome states and generating wholesome states. And what this is it's restraint of the senses or sensuality or sense faculties. So denying those things that your body is telling you to do. And I think there is some measure of that that's good for us as Christians. We shouldn't let our appetites run our lives. Right mindfulness. This is a quality that guards or watches over the mind. And I think we should have our minds renewed as Christians. And then the last one is right samadhi, which means meditation. And right away, a lot of Western Christian people, the whole meditation is evil. Well, you know, we're encouraged to meditate on God's word, to meditate on his being. In fact, Paul says, whatever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there's any virtue, any praise, think on these things. Well, that's meditation. What we don't want to do is open up our mind and just let whatever is out there come in and fill our head, which is what transcendental meditation is. So, but meditation is not a bad thing. I think David did a lot of meditating before he wrote those psalms.
Yes, but now biblical meditation and transcendental Eastern meditation, yeah, which started, you know, they're very different. The Eastern version is an emptying of your mind. And the Hebrew meditation, the mind is very active. You're reflecting on things. You're reflecting on God's law. You're not just opening up your mind to get in touch with other spirits. In fact, if anything, you'd be discouraged to do that, because the Bible teaches there are demonic spirits that want to mess with your mind.
Yeah, and that's where it gets dangerous. And that whole thing, when it flooded the U.S. in the late 60s because of George Harrison and his Maharishi and all of that, you know, I always thought that was odd, too. Because after that happened, universities and colleges were offering classes on meditation. There was no separation of church and state when it came to that stuff, Eastern religion. Anyway, so... But I digress.
Yeah, it's only Christianity that gets that prize.
Yeah. But what I observed is what you mentioned earlier. There are many people that profess Buddhism, but their lifestyles are quite materialistic, just like many Americans and Westerners profess Christianity, but they don't really live it. And I didn't see a whole lot of people over there that attended regular services or went to temple. Mostly the temples were full of tourists. That's not absolute exclusively, but that's where the crowds were. There are people taking pictures of the giant gold-covered statues of Buddha. And these temples were amazing, full of jewels, and they're beautiful, exquisite places. But again, when I go to Europe, especially in Italy, there are cathedrals and basilicas, and they're filled with gold and statues of Jesus. And even here in the U.S., I've been to some church buildings that are pretty opulent. And an awful lot of money being poured into the structures. My reaction to all of that was, I think the Buddha, who was not resurrected and didn't claim to have resurrection, but I think if the Buddha were to show up today, he'd be as embarrassed by some of the things being built to honor him as Jesus might be if he walked into some of our churches.
Yeah, no doubt.
He'd be turning over the money changers again. So, and I just saw a lot of similarities there. There was a lot of people that were nominal, as you said, but they weren't devout. I suspect the ones that are become monks, or at least the men. So anyway, that was some of my observation about Buddhism versus Christianity. Now, as we have talked, there is a difference between Christianity and just about every other religion I can think of. The first one is the claims that Jesus made about himself. He made outlandish claims. He claimed to be existed before the world. He claimed to be equal with God. He claimed that he would raise himself from the dead. He made some amazing claims. And the resurrection, which he claimed, and over 500 people saw him. I had a friend one time, he used to say, Muhammad died, they put him in the ground. Buddha died, they put him in the ground. Jesus died, they put him in the ground, and he got back up again. I'll take a winner every time. Or as Larry Norman said, he couldn't keep a good man down. So that's a huge difference, the resurrection. And then just the whole thing of the difference in the Bible and other religious works. The Bible is a completely unique book. And I know you've talked so much and taught about that a lot, but there are definite differences. And maybe the biggest difference, I believe, between real Christianity and any other religion or system is we can't save ourselves. Jesus died to accomplish what we cannot do through any amount of works or behavior or right thinking or any of that. It's faith in Christ and his vicarious atonement, death and resurrection and ascension. Those are the things that make what we believe different from any other religious system that I'm aware of. And for those of you listening and you think I'm nuts or I'm talking crazy, just call Bob later. He'll explain it to you. And you've got some good books out and stuff that talk about those things. There's a lot of stuff you can get, but Christianity, real Christianity, biblical Christianity is absolutely unique from any other system, despite the similarities in some of the moral codes. I hear people say all the time, oh, all religions are the same. Well, they're not, folks. They're just not. Maybe religion, man-made religion, yeah, but faith in Jesus Christ as your only hope of salvation is absolutely unique.
It is interesting that my very first year on the air doing this radio show all the way back in 2005, I had a seminary student on my show. I won't name the seminary. And he was a very nice guy, very sincere, but he had taken a trip, I believe in his case, it was to Tibet. And he had stayed at a Buddhist monastery. And he came back very confused because here he was preparing for ministry. And he said, well, these monks are compassionate too. They're compassionate just like Christians. So why should I be saying Christianity is the way? And I had to deal with them with kid gloves and say, well, it's not just a question of who's compassionate. It's a question of what they believe about God. What is actually the truth? All human beings are capable of being compassionate, but we also have an evil, sinful side of our nature as well. And it was clear that this guy, even though he was preparing for ministry, knew nothing about real Christianity. And that was exhibited by this trip he took to a Buddhist temple.
For me, it's frightening sometimes. I've known people that have gone to the best seminaries in the country, and the very small grasp they have on the fundamentals of the faith, I would call it. Now, I grew up old school, you know, and I've got my bookshelf here is lined with books that are mostly out of print, but people have studied the Bible and did historical research and stuff. And, you know, anymore today, I think if a young person goes to seminary with aspirations of ministry, what they learn is about tax law and how to avoid getting sued and how to run a business. And they're cranking out CEOs rather than pastors. That's my opinion. I've seen it. I've watched it. So things have changed in the last 50 years.
And there are good seminaries too. And Jim and I have both been to seminaries. Sure. So we're not knocking seminaries, but be careful which one you pick.
Yeah. And it's like everything else. You have to go in with the right motive. And then everything has to be tempered by your devotion to the Creator, your relationship with God, and allowing Him to guide you and let the Holy Spirit lead you and guide you into all truth. So those are things that need to be done.
Okay, Jim, hold with me. We're going to take another break here. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses,
WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Looking for a book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We're talking tonight about Buddhism, and one thing that I'm not sure Buddhism would forbid or not forbid, but we don't forbid it on this show within a show. Yes, it's time for another episode of Stump Jim Barrier.
Oh, well, well, Jim, we meet yet again. How about this?
Okay.
So,
this is my favorite part of the show.
Oh, good. And I know it's your wife's favorite one. I pick one that's very special for today, and I think it's very special to you as well. We're going to go to 1963, and we're going to do a folk song of all things. So I had to jump ahead because, of course, as usual with a lot of 60 songs, they'll say the title right at the beginning. So I'm going to go to the first verse of the song, and we're going to see if you can get this one. Here we go, Jim.
Okay.
Oh, well, I told my mama on the day I was born.
Okay, right there, boom.
Oh, I got it.
You want the background?
Let's go ahead and start off with the title and the artist first.
Okay. The title is Green Green, and it was released by the New Christy Minstrels, but the lead singer right there is my good friend Barry McGuire.
That is correct.
At Blue Mini Records in El Cajon, found a green vinyl copy of Green Green, so I gave it to him, a Green Green Green.
That's
I was thinking that guy did sound a little bit like Barry McGuire.
He did, yeah. Let's take a listen to it a little bit here.
Man, say, buddy, can you spare me a dime? Hear me crying, it's a green, green, it's green, they say, on the far side of the hill.
All right, so very good job there. So I chose this song specifically because, unfortunately, the lead singer of the New Christy Minstrels, Randy Sparks, passed away today in San Diego at the age of 90. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he just did today. Some interesting facts about this. I had no idea about this part. It was nominated in 1964 for Best Folk Recording and Best Performance by a Chorus. I didn't even know that was even a nomination back in the day, but you get chorusing was. And then this is an interesting fact on the Wikipedia page. I'm not kidding. It says here, since the popularity of the song has been covered by many singers and artists from all over the world, but especially in Japan. I'm like, well, why is that so specific? But okay. But there you go. So some interesting facts. And
a good way to weave Japan back into the conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I'd love to rattle off a little more trivia for you. Barry McGuire is one of my favorite people. And here's the thing. He was in New Christy Minstrels, and that was their biggest hit. And it wouldn't have been a hit without his voice. And then he went solo, and he did that song, The Eve of Destruction. You all remember that?
That was his main signature song before he became a Christian and started doing pop Christian tunes.
Did we ever do a show on, you know how we did American Pie, and we like analyzed the whole song?
Yeah.
Have we done one for Eve of Destruction? Because I know I did.
I don't think so, but if anybody could do it, Jim could.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I could. I could do it by heart. It was written by a man named P.F. Sloan, or Phil Sloan, P.F. Sloan, who also wrote Secret Agent Man by Johnny Rivers.
Oh, I love the song Secret Agent Man.
Yeah. He wrote Let Me Be by the Turtles. He wrote Take Me For What I'm Worth by The Search. He was a great songwriter. He was in the whole surf music thing and then went into folk rock. So he's a great one. And he passed away a few years ago. So Barry went solo and he had a huge hit with Eve of Destruction. And then his follow-up song was California Dreamin'. And
that's another one of my favorites. Of course, I'm familiar with the Mamas and the Papas version.
It was the same song. Barry was out of town, and they scrubbed his vocals and put John Phillips in and released it with John singing lead. And it was,
oh, you mean he originally sang with the Mamas and the Papas, yeah, and they scrubbed him? Now, that I did not know. Wow.
And in fact, when Barry used to give his testimony, he said, I found Jesus in Denny Doherty's living room, who was one of the Mamas and the Papas. And he said, and Denny said, I didn't even know Jesus was lost in my house.
Oh, boy. Why did they scrub his voice? Because it had that growl to it?
See, I watched a quick like video project from one of my favorite music reviewer guys, and he mentioned how they offered him a certain contract to sing the song, and then a bigger money-wise contract to sell the song to the Mamas and Papas, and he decided to choose that option instead.
Yeah.
That's what I heard, but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. Well, I've talked with Barry about it specifically, and that wouldn't be his take on it. So anyway, the Mamas and the Papas then had this huge career, and then John Phillips actually is the one who put on the Monterey Pop Festival, the first big rock festival, and Barry was again on the East Coast, and he couldn't go. He would have played at Monterey, but didn't. And then he got saved. I met him just a couple of weeks after he became a Christian, and that was fun. And then he started doing, I was in the studio with him when he did his first Christian album. It's called Seeds.
And then there was Barry McGuire in the second chapter of Acts, too, which was a great group.
Let me finish the story. So he was recording, and he had these backup singers on the album Seeds, and it was two girls and a guy, and Matthew Ward's voice hadn't even changed yet, so it sounded like three girls. And they later became the second chapter of Acts. So they toured with Barry, and he launched another career. So if it weren't for Barry McGuire, the New Christy Minstrels, the Mamas and the Papas, and second chapter of Acts may not have had the success they had. So there you go. That's my tribute.
They would have all been back in the first chapter of Acts if not for Barry McGuire.
So there's a little trivia for you.
I'm just impressed that Jim was able to connect it all. He's got like all the yarn works. He's like, see, the minstrels and then this. I'm telling you, it's all connected somehow.
It is. It's amazing music. And folks, if there are listeners out there thinking, well, I thought this guy was a pastor, what are you talking about, all this pop stuff? I'm going to remind you that Paul the Apostle quoted the Greek poets of the day. He was familiar with all the sporting events. He used illustrations about the races and about boxing.
Well, and in my Sunday class that I taught this morning at church, we were talking about how one of Jesus' parables compares heaven to a banquet.
Yeah.
And it was a banquet that people were refusing to go to.
Isn't that something? So, yeah, don't get too upset because we get involved in some of these quote-unquote secular things. The truth is all of us were secular until we met Jesus, and we're just redeemed. And so my whole approach on that has been, I want to redeem these things.
Well, plus a good song is a good song. It doesn't always have to be singing about Jesus.
You know what? Thank you.
A good song is good in its own right.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that. So, page two, as Paul Harvey used to say. And I want to do a little parenthetical interlude here. There have been a lot of natural disasters recently. You guys had the worst weather. I can't remember San Diego ever having this brutal weather. And so I've been reading in the last few weeks headlines that say things like this: Mother Nature unleashed her wrath. And it hit me. The same people who object to assigning gender to God have no problem assigning nature a gender as though nature is a person with a will.
Well, as long as Mother Nature cooperates with their global warming and climate change agenda, then it's just fine.
So I think that all comes under the heading of worshiping the creation rather than the creator. Anyway, I wanted to throw that in. It wasn't related to the first half or the second half of the show. Now, we're well into the back part of our show here, so I wanted to mention this. The Old Testament is full of stories about Israel facing decision. Saul was the first king of Israel because Israel wasn't content to have God as their ruler. They wanted a king like everybody else. And so they got Saul. That was the choice that they made. And in fact, you know, when Samuel was kind of feeling sorry for himself, God said, hey, they didn't reject you, they rejected me. Elijah challenged the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. And when he called down fire, all of a sudden people started saying, the Lord is God, the Lord is God. But it was to force them into a decision. Daniel's three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which were really not their, that wasn't their Hebrew names, but they chose the fiery furnace over worshiping a statue. What is it about statues in religion, by the way?
I guess a statue is a great big thing that you can look at.
Yeah, that's true. It's
some, there's
yeah.
a certain majesty to a statue.
Yeah, I suppose so. But as I pointed out, you know, most religions have their version of that, Christianity as well. But anyway, they chose to not go with the flow and the political pressure, and they wouldn't bow down and worship the statue, and they made a choice, and they were thrown into the fire and, of course, survived it. And in the New Testament, the Jews chose Barabbas over Jesus in front of Pontius Pilate, which, by the way, Mel Gibson accurately told that story in his film, The Passion of the Christ. And when he did, he was accused of being a racist. I can make no sense.
And as somebody who is both a Jew and a Christian, a Jew converted to Christianity, there is no racism or anti-Semitism in the New Testament.
No, whatsoever, or even in Mel's film, I think.
But, no, he was just portraying anyway, accurately what happened. Yeah, and even though the Jewish Sanhedrin did not like Jesus, the people that were following Jesus were also Jewish. There was a divide in Israel. Okay, Jim, hold with me for one more segment. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Welcome back again to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello for one more segment with Jim Barrier.
Well, you know, it's good. And it was my own decision. I notified you at the end of last year that we're traveling so much, like our trip to Bangkok and Thailand, that right now, limiting myself to one appearance a month on the show, and it makes me even look forward to it more. I get one shot at this a month. And so I'm very, very pleased to be a part of this program and in some small way a part of the Bob Siegel Ministries.
Yeah, but you're not really thinking of Brendan, because before he used to be able to prepare two stump Jim Barriers a month, and now he only gets to do one.
Well, yeah, and so he makes them really good. And, I have confidence in Brendan's ability to keep challenging me. we won't talk about my sports predictions. I'm already at 50%.
No, that's good, though. Come on. I was just telling him off the phone, Bob, that guess what? You actually got one correct. You said, I'm changing my mind on San Francisco. They're not going to win. And sure enough, there you go.
So, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I should have stuck with it, but they lost anyway. So back to the choices, the challenges. It's summed up when Joshua took over the lead of Israel, and they crossed over the Jordan into the Promised Land. And he issued this challenge. He said, if it is undesirable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve. The gods of your fathers that your fathers served who were beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are now living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that's always been the challenge. Who are you going to serve? Bob Dylan, you got to serve somebody. And I believe that we are in another time of decision. Now, 3 years ago, I said on this show, Joe Biden stole the election fair and square. And I'm sticking to that. But it should have never been close enough for them to steal the election. The American people have been either dumb enough or deceived enough to elect Bill Clinton twice, Barack Obama twice, and Joe Biden once. And by the way, Biden, he might be the worst president in history, at least in my lifetime. But his predecessor, Barack Obama, probably did the most damage, was the most divisive. I mean, and he made Creepy Joe the vice president.
Their policies were just as bad. It's just that Obama could do it with polish and finesse, which Joe does not have.
Well, as long as the teleprompter was working.
He didn't always do too well in that teleprompter, though.
No, he didn't. When that thing broke down, he just started stuttering around. He sounded just like Joe. But here we are. 2024 is, again, decision time for America. And it seems like every election I say, this is the most important election ever. And then every time it is.
That's because our country's dangling by an even thinner thread each election.
I'm telling you. And now I'm not saying that it's the same as Israel choosing a God. But in a sense, it is, because what you vote for, the platforms, the policies, if you vote for someone who has no conscience about murdering babies, and I'm talking about abortion, but that's what it is. It's murder. It's taking innocent human life. If you don't have a problem voting for somebody that supports that, I don't think you're siding with the God that I know in the Bible. If you support someone who trashes the Bible and says we need to keep God out of our government, have questions about your loyalties. Now, just about every president that I can think of has claimed to have some faith. They've claimed some religion or something. But there have been very few that really put it to practice and acted out a Christian version of leading this country. I know they have a president's prayer breakfast and things like that all the time. But folks, we're at a time where we need to pray that things change in this country and that we get some godly leadership, that we get some moral leadership, and we quit selling our souls to the devil, because that's what I think America has done. Oh, I'm getting all political here, Bob. That's okay, isn't it?
It's okay by me.
I think that this year is really, really critical, and I think there was a point when I was thinking Donald Trump didn't have a chance of winning this election. I'm not so sure about that. I think Donald Trump may very well...
Well, the Democrats know he would win. That's why they're trying to keep him from running. They're trying to get his name removed from the ballot. These court cases are just outrageous. Yeah. So they want to win the battle in court. They know they can't win it at the ballot box. They can cheat there. But I don't even think they have faith in their ability to cheat this time. Because, like you said, if it's not close enough, they can't really pull off all the cheating. I mean, they'll cheat, but they can't pull off enough. So they're trying to keep him from running at all. They know full well. I mean, you would think that a gadfly could beat Joe Biden, but this is Donald Trump. We're going from one of the best presidents we've had to absolutely the worst. And or one of the three worst, as Brendan would put it.
Maybe the most pro-life president that we've had in the era of Roe v. Wade. He put Supreme Court justices on there with the understanding that they would be pro-life.
Yeah, he's done things that conservatives have wanted to see for years, and yet how many conservative never-Trumpers do we have because they don't like the guy's tweets? Yeah.
Well, they say they want, but, you know, actions speak louder than words. And how they vote in the Congress and Senate tells you a lot about what they really believe. Anyway, whether you vote or not, and that's odd for me to say, but pray that we have a turnaround in this nation. We are, as Bob said, we're dangling by a thread. And there needs to be a turnaround. And I've said this 100 times on this show, I think. We need a genuine spiritual renewal. We need a revival. We need repentance in this country. And we need people to turn to the creator of the universe and seek him. Similar to what Joshua challenged, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that's what I would like to see the House and the Senate serve the Lord. And I just don't know. Well, all we can do is wait it out. We're having early voting for some primaries and local offices here start tomorrow in my state. And there are people I will vote for because they support programs and agendas that are more in line with what I believe as a Christian. And so it is important to support those people. And if you know what you're doing, if you're educated, then vote. If you don't know anything about it, you're doing more harm than good sometimes, but we're at a critical time in our country's history right now. So I just appeal to you, if you do nothing else, pray that this country will turn. I'm running out of time here, I think. Let me ask you this, if we got a minute, who would you like to see Trump pick as a running mate if he gets the nomination?
Well, right now, anybody except Nikki Haley. I'm so disappointed.
No, none of the above. That's what she's going to be saddled with, I think. That's her legacy, that Lex word. None of the above got more votes than she did.
Yeah, Jim's referring to the Nevada primary where people voted the above instead of Nikki Haley. Her statement that you should be of a certain age before you could run for president, that is so outrageous. And she's using Biden as the fodder and then transferring it over to Trump. She served under his administration. If she thought he was so old, why did she serve in his administration? I actually really like Ramaswamy, and I think he would make an excellent VP because he can articulate in a linear way the things that Trump says through shock value. Well, Jim, we're out of time, so we'll have to hear who you would like to see him pick as a running mate next time.
Next time.
All right. God bless you, everybody. We'll see you next time.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.